Okay, let's move to, let's move to 340.
Require the identification and acquisition of rights to develop affordable housing on a site in North McAdam that will fully achieve all affordable housing goals in the district.
Commissioner Fish.
Mayor, first, I want to thank you and the council for rescheduling this entire package of issues from last week to this week. I was in the great city of San Francisco with my family getting visas and work permits and everything straightened out, so I appreciate the courtesies that you extended. It also gave us a chance to file the resolution that is before us and to work out some of the finish line issues. I want to offer a little context for how we got to this place. There has been over the last, say, 8 months or to a year, a very robust community discussion centering on how the city fulfills commitments that were made back in 2003 concerning affordable housing in North McAdam. And while originally there were a package of amendments were offered by you, Mayor, to effectively right-size urban renewal, this issue about housing came to dominate the discussions around the Fourth Amendment to the North McAdam Urban Renewal Plan. Something I think very powerful happened in this period, which is a lot of people came together and rolled up their sleeves and said, how can we find a way to move forward and meet some of these ambitious goals? And if you look at the 2003 North Mac development strategy, in fact, it specifically describes some of those goals as ambitious goals. As a result of a lot of community activism, including Gretchen Kefouri's last appearance before any deliberative body, we have moved the ball pretty significantly, both in the Fourth Amendment, which is not the subject of my resolution, and in my resolution, which sets a framework for a second development within North Mac. So the Fourth Amendment, which we'll be voting on in a little bit, specifically calls out a development on what has been identified as Parcel 3 and identifies the funding to make a substantial down payment towards some existing affordable housing goals. This resolution commits the council to a second development within a specified time frame with funding to complete the goals that were set for 0 to 60, that is, people at 60% of MFI and below, the people that are currently struggling the most in our market, particularly people at the 0 to 30 range, that would complete our commitment at that level and allow us to begin to stretch to other commitments that were made around affordable housing. There was some consideration given to seeking to boost the numbers at Parcel 3 to fit as many units as possible. And I think one of the concerns that was highlighted by the Housing Bureau was they did not want to make a commitment around Parcel 3 they could not fulfill. And that was, I think, the nature of the conversation, a lot of candid talk about we all shared a goal, but we wanted to make sure we could reach that goal. So instead of thinking in terms of Parcel 3 as the only place to meet some goals, my resolution would commit the council to a second site to be determined, although there are two opportunity sites that are in our target, and would allow us to complete the existing 0 to 30 goals and 0 to 60 goals and then begin to make progress on our additional goals. This is the product of a lot of hard work by a lot of people and a lot of what I would consider highly collaborative. In my view, the most important piece of this was the public and a number of activists calling out the fact that we were falling short and we needed to do something. And that energy, combined with the council really focusing on this, leads today to having this matter before the council. Later, Mayor, I'll identify some of the people who are at the table and specifically thank them. What this does is simply say that within a specified time period, a second piece of land will be identified for the second development, which will allow us to fulfill all of our 0 to 60 goals under the 2003 strategy. It doesn't say that we're going to be finished in meeting affordable housing goals. And as additional resources are generated, we will continue to make progress meeting our then goals and the new goals that we've established. But I will put this in context. At the time that the Fourth Amendment was originally proposed, there were approximately somewhere between $7 and $9 million of TIF available for affordable housing in North McAdam. And that doesn't buy much. The action that I hope we take today will ensure at least $47 million is allocated to two specific developments within North McAdam, down payments on meeting goals that we established in 2003 and have not yet fulfilled, and putting us, I think, on a forward path to do even more. I'm happy to talk in detail about the resolution which has been filed, and I think, Mayor, we have an amendment that is going to be proposed. So perhaps at this point we should turn to Commissioner Novick.
Okay. Commissioner Novick, you have an amendment?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Thank you, Mayor. I do have a proposed amendment, which is basically rooted in an excess of caution. The second be it resolved paragraph now says that through second site acquisition and development, PDC and PHB will fully achieve all affordable housing goals in North McAdam as defined by the 2003 North McAdam Rural Area Housing Development Strategy. I think that, that's the way it reads currently, and I think that that might be susceptible to an out-of-context interpretation that we will spend whatever money is necessary to achieve those goals, even if it's $1 billion. Now, in context, that's clearly not the intent. As the rest of the resolution reflects, the intent is that $47 million will be used to achieve those goals. But again, in an excess of caution, I mean, given that we have a limited amount of money, we have other needs in the district for transportation parks at all, I'm proposing that the be it resolved be amended to read, now therefore be it resolved that through second site acquisition and development, PDC and PHB will use up to $47 million in TIF revenue towards achieving affordable housing goals in North McAdam as defined by, et cetera.
Okay. So I'll second the amendment, Mayor, for purpose of discussion, and I'd like to have a quick colloquy with the proposer. So thank you, Steve, and thank you for clarifying that the $47 million is TIF resources. And I also appreciate the clarification, because there was a drafting error in my resolution. There was no way we were going to fully achieve all affordable housing goals on the second site. And I think we've become so accustomed to thinking in terms of the most pressing goals as 0 to 60 that we use it interchangeably with affordable housing goals. And the truth is that was not our intent. So as I understand your amendment, it simply says that for the particular project identified in the Fourth Amendment, which is in Parcel 3, and in the second project to be identified under my resolution, there is up to $47 million of TIF available to fund those two projects, and it makes no other changes to my resolution or to the Fourth Amendment.
Exactly.
So I'm pleased to second it.
Okay. Other comments? And should we take a roll call to accept the amendment, and then we'll take public testimony?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay. Amendments concluded. So now we can take testimony on the resolution.
About 13 people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are Joe Walsh, Mr. Lightning, and Charles Johnson. And they'll be followed by Debbie Iona, Leal Greenwood, and Margaret Bax.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. I really have a question here, and maybe someone can explain this to me. When I hear the term affordable housing, in my mind, what that generates is the average earning capacity of a person in Portland, which is about $60,000 a year. And if you take the affordable housing, that becomes a percentage of what they pay. So it could be as much as $50,000, $60,000, if they have to pay the full amount, depending on how much income they have coming in. I would like to see the wording change to low-income housing instead of affordable housing. And that has at least the implications that we really care about people that are struggling. When you say the people that are struggling in Portland, and if you base it on $60,000 a year, that excludes a lot of people. So if you were to change the wording on this stuff to say low-income housing, that would incorporate people that are making minimum wage that we all seem to be really worried about. And I find it offensive when I hear politicians use the phrase affordable housing because it's a con phrase. It appeases the liberals, doesn't upset the conservatives because the conservatives are really aware of what's going on. So I would like to see our progressive elected officials start to use wording that makes sense to us. So if you're going to argue that you are concerned about people struggling, then what about the people that are struggling on low income? Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog X. I do agree with Commissioner Novick's amendment on the $47 million and pointing out its TIF revenue resources. One of the things I do question, though, is that when you're stating to meet the goals on the remaining properties, whether it's an additional one or two parcels, I'd like to have a better time frame on exactly when you're planning on purchasing these additional parcels, because I don't want these to be purchased at such a late date that the values are going to be so high that it will begin to not really make any sense on the overall number. So I want to have this a little bit better understanding on your timing on committing yourself to a purchase agreement on the additional parcels. Another issue I have on the affordable housing issues is that I have a real issue on setting height restrictions on people that want to build additional units for affordable housing. I want developers to have the freedom to come in with ideas for additional affordable housing units and having their height restrictions negotiated upon them doing that for the public good. Again, we're looking at numbers here that are always estimates. We're looking at projecting out, and that's all great, but if we look at the current situation, we have a lot of people out there that need housing. We need to get them into housing, and we need to offer the developers incentives to do that. If we want to restrict them with the SDCs, try to add additional cost to them, if we try to restrict them in other areas, the developers are going to step back and say, it doesn't make any sense to me to look at this time. I don't have any interest in affordable housing. The numbers don't work for me. We have to make the numbers work for the developers. We have to give them the incentives. We have to have the understanding that it's more advantageous to have people in housing than out on sidewalks. Again, we need to keep looking at those areas for the developers to continue to build projects, to continue to focus on affordable housing, and be offered incentives on height restrictions to let them be able to develop their projects and offer more housing and not be shut down due to the limitations of heights. Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. Assisting. There we go. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson, and let's just have a moment of honesty. Lies, 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 deceit, manipulation. Those are the provinces of law. We have about 40 attorneys work for the city's attorney's office. They should be looking at litigating these developers into remedying their mistakes. No passes. We criminalize and litigate against poor people all the time. We can do it to the rich just as well. Well, they'll have better defense attorneys. So let's make that the starting point. And of course, we don't really know if it's just developers that are the problem. It could be previous members of this council that are also the problem. So it really isn't just an issue for the city attorney's office trying to get recovery and legal pressure on developers so that the plan put forth by Commissioner Fish will be constrained by TIF money. It also means that dearly departed Amanda Marshall, who came up here and lied about the Muhammad case, her successor, the acting United States Attorney for Oregon, should actually be doing a criminal investigation of fraud and deceit in the development in the McAdam area. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Next three are Debbie Iona, Leal Greenwood, and Margaret Bax, and they'll be followed by Will White, Susan Emmons, and Carolyn Whitney.
Good morning. I think you're first, Debbie.
Okay. I'm Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League appreciates Commissioner Fish's efforts to give the public more certainty about meeting the North McAdam affordable housing goals. Unfortunately, the resolution does not go far enough. The actions described will not fully achieve all the district's affordable housing goals. The constrained funding model in the Urban Renewal Plan applies to the first 3,000 units. Once that point has been reached, the comprehensive plan applies, and future housing development should match the income profile of the city as a whole. There are currently about 2,500 units, so we are fast approaching that point. It was clear from the beginning that because the need for infrastructure, affordable housing, and parks was so great, and the funds limited, it would be especially important to require commitments for land and infrastructure improvements from the property owners benefiting from the substantial public investment. It is not too late to make that happen. City Council should start by withholding approval of the amendment until agreements with Zidell and OHSU for housing sites, parks, and streets are in place. One more housing site in addition to Parcel 3 is not sufficient, and delaying acquisition of an option to purchase land until 2023 is unacceptable. It is entirely possible nothing will be left by then, and what is left likely will be unaffordable. Instead, the city should put money down to secure a site now with the price locked in. OHSU should transfer ownership of half of Block 33 to the city for affordable housing development in lieu of repaying the $2 million in housing money it owes. OHSU needs to do its part to contribute to the district's housing and infrastructure needs. The Schnitzer campus is situated on 20 acres of donated land and it is tax exempt. Surely OHSU can spare 1 acre for housing that would serve its lower paid workers. The remainder of the development capacity on Parcel 3 should be reserved for affordable housing, particularly for units below 30% MFI. Given the city's lackluster performance on affordable housing to date, there is little confidence among the public that any more sites will be secured. The River District Urban Renewal Area has been held up as a model of success. In that case, the development agreement and urban renewal plan were adopted concurrently. For the most part, the developer and city held up their ends of the bargain, and in return for city infrastructure improvements, land was made available for parks and affordable housing. The League wants to see that success repeated in South Waterfront and urges you to secure commitments from property owners before adopting the amendment. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Leah Greenwood, and I'm actually here as the former housing policy manager at the Portland Development Commission during a lot of the planning for North McAdam. And I wanted to give a little bit of history to explain that where we're at now is because we haven't done anything for the last 12 years. We're at a place because we didn't secure land early that there are few options for us, and I think Debbie articulated what we really should be doing in the future. The resolution is seen as a win, but it really isn't. In 1999, the framework plan for North McAdam was adopted, and it outlined what the affordable housing goals for the district would be if we were to follow the longstanding affordable housing policy of the city of Portland. And that policy was something that was exemplified in the implementation of the River District. We recognize that the infrastructure needs were greater in North Macadam, and through a public process that was huge and long, we actually adopted a constrained funding model for affordable housing, constrained goals. And those goals were only 40% of what would have been adopted if we had applied the same policy that we used in the River District. Only 40% of the units. In 2003, we developed the housing strategy, and there were some key elements to that. One was that we knew there weren't any publicly owned sites suitable for housing in the district, and that a fair share assignment of affordable units to major landowners was the key recommendation of that strategy. And targets were calculated based on what landowners held. We also said there'd be an annual report that would review the progress, and that inventories of housing would be conducted every 3 to 5 years. In 2005, the Seventh Amendment to the Central District really put Block 33 as the primary real estate focus for achieving affordable housing. And at that time, PDC purchased parking units, non-existent parking stalls, but parking stalls that were to be developed. In 2006, the Eighth Amendment revised that focus to be both Block 33 and Block 49. And PDC actually acquired land from North Macadam Investors, $5 million, and then it did a sole source development agreement with them. They acquired air rights from North Macadam Investors and did a first right of refusal that they could develop the affordable housing above Block 33. And then we didn't build anything. We finally did develop Block 49. But until now, there's been no discussion of what our strategy would be. And my question is, what did we do the last 10 years? We really need leadership on this. In 2010, we eliminated Block 33 as a strategy. We need leadership.
Hi, Margaret Bax, 3435 Northeast 22nd. I'm going to try to adjust what I said based on what they said and see if I understand Commissioner Fischer's proposal early. I guess first I do want to thank everyone for the opportunity to comment again. This thing has been a gnarly one. It's drawn out for a while, and we appreciate everyone really continuing to try to struggle with this. And
Margaret, in fairness, you coined the word gnarly, and it was nice to have you use it in your opening.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, a lot of jokes about bringing back the old guard, and I do prefer not to be called the old bat, but here we are again, along with other former PDC and City of Portland staff and housing advocates. And, you know, we're here because we care deeply about Portland being a city with opportunities for everyone, opportunities for people of all income levels, stages of life, to live, to work, and play in these diverse neighborhoods, including the new and emerging ones like North Macadam. I'm also here as a volunteer on the Home for Everyone Housing Work Group that's been working with the city and county staff over the last several months to recommend strategies to reduce homelessness in our community. Just last night, Mary Carroll, that works on homeless issues for County Chair Deborah Cafori, was telling me, you know, it's taken veterans. Sorry, Gretchen comes back with me sometimes and I get a little emotional. It's taken veterans 40 days to find housing, even with vouchers, and down payments, because there just aren't enough affordable housing units. We have to increase that supply, and we need to be aggressive and strategic in using every housing dollar available. We're not here to pick on anyone, not here to pit funding for parks and streets against funding for housing. We're here to just remind you again of the commitments made by us city staff, city agencies, and previous councils, and we want to work with you to meet those commitments. These are commitments, again, that were made after extensive public input and process. We want citizens of Portland to know that commitments made in the past will be honored, and that the commitments made today by you guys are going to be honored by future city officials. We believe in government and want others in the city to trust and believe in government, too. You know, we've been back and forth about the different number of sites, but you know, it's really not that. Can I have a little bit more? We're not that far away. You know, for the first 3,000 units that we're talking about, this constrained goal, we need 270 units more. For the second 1,000 units, you need 300 units. At 200 units an acre, that's a total of 520 units, which is basically 3 acres of land. You've got 2 acres at Parcel 3 if you choose to develop that off for affordable housing. You're currently in negotiations with another property owner for another acre of land. With that property, you could meet it, along with the funding that you've got and will expect to get in the future. You know, whatever percentage, there will be more revenue in North McAdam, just like there was in River District, probably a lot more. City debt office is very professional and very smart about underestimating some of those things. So I absolutely believe if we have the three sites, we can do it. If you don't want to use all of Parcel 3, the only site the city still has left for a full affordable housing project, then you need one more site. And I agree with Leah and Debbie that Parcel 3 is a good place to go. OHSU still owes you $2 million. We paid $6 million for it. At the time, some of us argued against it. I, for one, was very skeptical about it, but was told it was a great investment, that even if housing wasn't built there, if the parking garage wasn't built, that we would get not only the $6 million back, but we would get more back, that it was a good investment, a leverage against rising land costs. So, you know, I'm quite sure that the people who made the deal in 2010 weren't aware of all of those conversations or whatever, because not everything was documented or documents that people have read. But that's the kind of community commitment and community discussion that I'm referring to, that we remember very clearly. So, you know, you have your choices. You can either do all of Parcel 3 plus the one you're working on now, or take, you know, see if OHSU will transfer back that either Block 33 or another acre anywhere in their holdings, and you will have the sites to do the housing. With the money that you've set aside, with the TIF set aside, you will have the money and leverage those with the other housing resources, the vouchers. I think someone from the Housing Authority may be here today. They have lots and lots of vouchers that they can't get out because they don't have the sites. They don't have the place to put them. So we're so close as a community to put all these resources together. I'm absolutely confident that we could do it. And I thank you again very much for really trying to dig in and make this work, and for your staffs who have continued to struggle with this along with the rest of us for the last several months and years and decades, whatever, depending on who you are. Thank you.
Can I just make, Margaret, before you go, just make one comment, because you've been absolutely critical to this process, and I just want to reaffirm a commitment that I hope we're going to make today with a unified council. We will build at least 270 units. That's the remaining goal at 0 to 60 that we have to do. We will build those two. One project will start in 2017. We will acquire a second piece of dirt, and there's at least two places right now that I know we can do it. We used to have $7 million to fund it. We now have a commitment of at least $47 million that's available for this. And to put this in context, 1 year ago, we had no path forward, and we had no money. And so I take Debbie's comments very to heart, that this is not a day we're going to pop champagne and say, you know, we're done. But I also, having worked with that great optimist once named Barney Frank, I refuse to miss the opportunity to acknowledge the extraordinary work of the community to get to a milestone. A year ago, we had no money and no path forward, and thanks to especially you two, I hope today with a big vote, this council is prepared to say at least 270 will be built, the money is there, and we'll make that commitment, and I guarantee you we have the sites to do this. So that's what your admonishment to us, and I appreciate it. And when the council votes today, we're going to be saying back to you that we make that commitment, and you've asked for it, and we're going to. And the resolution was drafted so that there could be no ambiguity that we are making that additional commitment. So.
Thank you. Thanks, Margaret. Thank you all.
The next three are Will White, Susan Emmons, and Carolyn Whitney, and they'll be followed by Ruth Atkins, Dan Valeri, and Jess Larson.
Good morning. Go ahead, but you have to push the button on the microphone there. There you go.
Good morning. My name is Carolyn Whitney. Mayor and commissioners, I appreciate the opportunity to speak today. I feel like I should apologize because I didn't know about this meeting until last night, so I don't feel very well prepared. And also, I hope that I don't speak as an opponent to low-income housing, because I really believe in that. But I urge you to approach this with democracy. There was a speaker before me that talked about having people work together to figure out how to implement housing, and I really think that's true. So I am speaking for myself today, a resident at the Strand, and I pay $7,000 a year for taxes for 1,200 square feet, and I know that a lot of that is going to go for low-income or affordable housing, and I think that's great. I have strong feelings about the need for having that in the city. I helped a woman who whose family was living in a car, who was struggling and earning her way through law school to get a job at Bonneville Power, a very good job, and so I really care for those people. My problem is, and I think the problem of some of the residents at the Strand, is we confuse the security along the riverbank, the gem of really Portland, and the people who are using drugs and prefer to live on the street. We get confused, I think, about whether or not those are the low-income people. And so we need somebody to come and talk to us about who are these people that are going to be moving in, if it's low-income citizens, you know, older people, if it's students at Portland State that have a family and they're struggling. They're welcome for sure, and we'd like to help you cite them in our neighborhood. But it's with all this confusion and apprehension that we're being informed by the newspapers about this coming in, and we don't really know about that. We don't know if we should be concerned about our safety or not. So I think it would be advantageous for some of your staff or somebody to come and talk to us so that we can be welcoming the people that are coming in. And the other thing I'm concerned about is the resources, if we have the right resources for people, 500 people, 200 people. I don't really know how it's going to be. So it sounds like I have the tone there that I need to stop talking. But I was wondering if I could ask a question here. The two additional sites that are being considered, could you tell me where those two sites are?
Yeah, actually, can I first respond to your first comment? Dan, would you stand and raise your hand for a second? We have the executive director of REACH CDC here, and you asked what might this look like. Well, we don't have to give you a hypothetical. The only other affordable housing development in your neighborhood is operated by REACH, and it's a little bit to the south of where you live currently. And I would say that, and Dan, let me take a liberty on this if I could. If you'd connect with him before you leave, I think the first step is to go see what he's doing, because the building that that REACH operates is going to be quite similar to what is contemplated closer to your neighborhood. And I will tell you that we get lots of complaints at City Council from people for all kinds of things. We do not get complaints about the folks who live at Gray's Landing or the way it's operated. And I think it'll go a long way to allaying some of your concerns if you see how REACH operates its development. And then we can follow up with answering your questions. In terms of sites, there are a couple of sites that are under consideration. One is called Harbor Nato. It's not the preferred site. And there is currently a negotiation underway with Mr. Zidell and the Zidell Property Group. And they've identified a piece of dirt in their footprint, which the city could acquire. So those are two candidates for what would be the third total development in South Waterfront, which under my resolution, the dirt has to be acquired between now and 2022.
So the site is not where the substation currently is. That's not under consideration.
No.
Well, that site is the one. Yes, that site is slated for development.
Parcel 3 is the site that's in the amendment.
So if you want to get in touch with my office, I'll make sure the Portland Housing Bureau involves the Strand residents in that decision. But yes, Parcel 3 is the first parcel that will be developed for affordable housing.
So Parcel 3 includes the land that's currently empty as well as the substation land. Is that right?
Well, I don't think it includes the substation, but it includes the adjoining land.
Okay.
We can definitely follow up with you and get you more information.
Yeah, if you want to get in touch with my office.
Okay, and I think that it would be important to have a conversation with the businesses that are along the Esplanade. I've talked to a few of them, and they have no idea what's happening.
Good suggestion. Thank you. Mr. White.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. Good morning, Mr. Mayor and members of City Council. It's good to be before you again. At last
put
month's
your name
council,
in the record, Will. Just pardon? Put your name in the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Will White, former director of the Bureau of Housing and Community Development. At last month's council hearing, I testified about a history of broken promises in the North McAdam URA with regard to housing. I also outlined the steps the city could take now to turn the South Waterfront District into a truly mixed-income neighborhood, rather than one affordable only to middle and upper-class Portlanders. My key points then were the following. Utilize Parcel 3 for maximum development of affordable housing. Stick to the goal committed to in 2003 that housing after the first 3,000 units will match the income profile of the city as a whole. And to do this, acquire sites now. As you know, the city is currently 270 units behind the promised production of affordable housing in North McAdam. And by the time Parcel 3 is developed and 4,000 units total have been built in the district, the shortfall would be 570 units, less whatever is developed on Parcel 3. To develop 570 homes, we need approximately 3 acres of land. If all of Parcel 3 is used for affordable housing, just one more acre would be required to reach existing targets. If only half of Parcel 3 is used for affordable housing and the balance for other housing, we would need 2 more acres. Those sites should be secured now before they become even more expensive. They don't need to be developed now because we don't have the funds to secure and develop. But locking up those sites is critical. That's what we've failed to do in the past, and what leaves you having to confront the difficult bind you have now of trying to find sites where these goals can be met. I also wanted to say a word about the income mix and the recommendation that workforce housing should be built there, perhaps on Parcel 3. This is certainly a worthy goal, but this is not where the primary need is in our community. The data shows that currently we are short 23,000 units of housing affordable to people below 30% of median income, and another 600 units that we're short for those between 31 and 50% MFI. However, there is a surplus of 45,000 units for households between 51 and 80% MFI, and the excess of affordable housing increases as we go higher up the income scale. So again, the gap of over 23,000 homes affordable to people below 30% is the great housing challenge now facing our community. With regard to financing, the priority is just now to acquire those sites. We can get the rest of the development money down the road, and we can supplement TIF and general fund with federal funds that include those rent subsidy contracts that can write down the rents through project-based Section 8, vouchers for homeless veterans, and a new batch of McKinney vouchers. In its current form, I would not personally support approving the Urban Renewal Amendment. Some have been surprised at that, saying, well, there's $47 million in additional affordable housing money. Why wouldn't you support that? But to be clear, the net increase in tax increment for affordable housing is only $3 million, not $47 million. And finally, another concern I've heard expressed is that too much money is being spent on housing versus infrastructure, such as transportation and parks. And those are also goals that I support. I checked the expenditures to date, and in fact, over the life of the district, where a total of $150 million in TIF has been spent, nearly twice as much has been spent on infrastructure as has been spent on housing. $62 million for infrastructure versus $35 million on housing. In closing, I just want to note that when I last testified before you last month, I sat at this table with Gretchen Kefauri. Sadly, she is no longer with us, but I'm certain that she would advise you not to move forward on North Macadam until we can be certain that it will be a community open to all Portland citizens. And I second that thought and leave you with an urging to find the leadership to develop a way to make North Macadam open to all while completing the parks and infrastructure and other needs that we want to see in that vibrant district. Thank you very much.
Emmons.
My name is Susan Emmons. I'm the director of Northwest Pilot Project, and I just like to start by saying that I think we've all fully exhausted each other on this subject, and I thank everybody for hanging in and being here today and having one more chance to talk about this. I've been in my job for 30 years, and from 1992 to 1995, I chaired the Housing and Community Development Commission, and what I was most interested in my time there was not big documents that sat on a shelf, but identifying a problem and saying, what's the solution? And we did that. We had a 10-page document that Kathy Briggs authored, and we showed at the time great statistics that we had a shortage for people, men, women, and children in Multnomah County who were at 30% of median or less. We had a shortage of 10,000 units. And I said, well, what would it take as a citizen? What would it take to solve that? And the solution was $500 million. And I was really lobbying at that time for a housing trust fund. But people got the figure. They said, okay, here's the need, and here's the figure. And we all blinked, $500 million. Well, where's that money going to come from? And we moved on. In that time period, we did wonderful things with transportation in this system. We built a light rail system. We built a streetcar. We spent $100 million on one light rail stop on the west side. And of course, we're going to have a stop at the zoo, but we made that a priority. We didn't say, is there the money? And maybe it was federal in origin. Certainly some of it was, maybe most of it was. But we said, we're going to do this, and we did it. So I think that when we come to North Macadam, I think that our thought was, with the River District in North Macadam, we're not going to get housing for people, the poorest of the poor, in East Moreland, in Willamette Heights, and Irvington. Those were built neighborhoods. And the reason we became so focused on these new neighborhoods, here's an opportunity. Not that it's going to be all for the poorest of the poor, but a segment, a fair share. So I think now we come down to Parcel 3. I'm excited about it. I would really encourage you and everyone in charge not to be reluctant. I can stand on the corner of Southwest 12th and Clay and look in eyesight at over 500 units that are affordable to people at 30% of median or less. The Roschnitzer Tower, Hamilton West, Peter Paulson, 12th Avenue Terrace, Gretchen Kefauri Commons. I think you can do decent housing. It can be beautifully managed. It can be a good neighbor. I'd love to tour you and anyone from the Strand through any of these housing. So I say, let's get 200 units on Parcel 3 for people at 30% of median, because as Will said, fast forward from 1995, a shortage of 10,000 units, to 2015, we have a shortage of 23,000 units. We desperately need this housing for the most vulnerable people in our community.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all.
The next three are Ruth Atkins, Dan Valeri, and Jess Larson. And the last person who signed up will be Justin Burry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just push the button on the base of that there, Dan.
Good morning. Thanks for taking all this testimony today. I'll try to be brief because you've heard a lot already, but Dan Valier, Reach Community Development. owner-manager at Gray's Landing and many other affordable apartments around the city, and affordable housing, to define it, which is important. At REACH, that means all of our housing is affordable to households with income below 60% of median, and many are affordable to households below 30% of median, depending on the building and the apartment. So again, to start with a positive, I mean, I have been struck here the past almost 2 years. Portland does have a longstanding commitment to mixed-income communities and being inclusive, because a lot of progress has been made. You just heard Susan Emmons talk about some of the examples of that. That's to be celebrated. And also been struck by the fact that there are many strong people and organizations working on housing in Portland. You don't all see in cities. I'll highlight even the Housing Authority, which in some cities, the Housing Authority is a big problem. And here it's not. You know, we have one of the most innovative housing authorities in the country. I mean, I've heard that time and again when I'm in other cities. So we have a lot to build on, and that's really good. And then I would say the progress that's been made the past few months here with Parcel 3 is also really good. And so thank you. And really thank you for making the progress. And the only other piece I'll offer in support of the resolution is that it points us in a good direction. I think what still isn't in the resolution and is a fundamental piece is what's the monitoring process, what's the tracking process we're all going to use so that we continue to move forward, you know, after the first win here. Because that, from what I've heard from the many who have testified who have been here longer than me, that's what often has made the difference, is there was forums, there were processes so that progress could be tracked, and private individuals, private organizations, public sector could work together to come up with a strategy and make it happen over a period of years. So thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners, Mayor Hales. Thank you again for taking this testimony. It's good to be here with my colleagues, and I echo many of the sentiments that have been shared this morning. My name is Jessica Larson. I'm the director of the Welcome Home Coalition. And this morning, I guess I just want to add to the conversation 2 points from the perspective of my current work and the perspective of my past work. Currently, leading up the Welcome Home Coalition, our work, we're an organization of 75 local nonprofits working to address the affordable housing crisis before our city and metro region. And my first assignment was to convene a survey of how other cities are funding affordable housing with local revenue strategies. Clearly, federal resources, state resources are not going far enough everywhere. Cities around the country like ours are in the midst of this housing crisis. And what could we do? And unfortunately, what we find is a list of revenue mechanisms that are preempted in Oregon, preempted at the state level. And here we are with the TIF set aside, which was an enormous win about a decade ago for affordable housing advocates and has brought a lot of revenue, $150 million to Portland for affordable housing development. Unfortunately, that revenue is limited to use in only our urban renewal areas. And so here we are working to find new solutions for affordable housing, because clearly this conversation is evidence of the fact that our TIF set aside, while wonderful, is not going the distance to meet the need of our affordable housing crisis, of our 20,000 unit shortage in the Portland area for families and individuals with less than 30% income. We have a lot of work to do, but the TIF set aside is our opportunity to do it, and the urban renewal districts are the opportunity for us to implement this strategy. And so I'm here to ask and encourage and thank you for finding ways to make this resource go the distance while it's the only resource we have. And then the second point I want to bring to the conversation is from the perspective of my previous work, where I was at Northwest Pilot Project for 8 years and Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare for 2 years before that, working with people with very low incomes in the midst of a housing crisis. And we're behind 270 units today in North McAdam, and I know if housing had been the priority of our strategy in North McAdam from the get-go, we'd have 270 families who are in shelters, who are doubled up in cars, living at home now in North Mac. And so I'm just asking, we have an urgent need. We have families ready to go. We know that this is the greatest indicator of equity, of graduation rates, of opportunity, and this is our opportunity to do it. If not now, when? If not in North McAdam, where? Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Justin Burry, Executive Director, Community Alliance of Tenants, and I will keep it brief because a lot of my colleagues have delved into the details. You know, we've interesting because we've seen a little bit of the old guard, new guard conversation here, but we know that the conversation is the same and the need is the same, and we need more affordable housing priorities here in the city. And I appreciate the fact that the situation that we're in now is the product of past decisions that we may not be able to overcome, and appreciate the work that this council has done to try to get us as close to there as possible. But we know that Portland is becoming less and less affordable, especially for people with working families, disabilities, and seniors. And as we put investments into these areas of urban renewals, we have to prioritize housing. We have to do better. On our end at the Community Alliance of Tenants, we hear on the Renters' Rights Hotline astronomical rent increases, and there is such a dire need for people to find and keep affordable housing, and the private market will not provide enough. We need more investments. We need more priorities, and even people that can afford some of the private markets are still having trouble getting into housing just because of the competition that's out there and the fact that the vacancy rate is so low. And we've come up short year after year, again and again, on these commitments that we've made. And we need to do better. We need to hold ourselves the commitments that we have set. Like Jess mentioned just a second ago, if not North McAdam, where? If not now, when? We've put millions of dollars of investments into these areas with great redevelopment and parks and transportation. And if we're not providing enough housing opportunities across the income scale, then how equitable are these investments? How successful are these investments if the people that live and work and contribute to the city don't have enough opportunity to live there? And we really can't build our way out of this housing crisis with mostly private development. The more private development we build, that actually creates more of a need for affordable housing. And we, as a community, can look forward not only now but in the next coming years and see what we can do about prioritizing affordable housing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you all.
That's all who signed up.
Anyone else want to speak on the resolution? Then let's take a...
Ask a question?
Sure.
So we're going to vote on the resolution, then we're going to go through the amendments?
Yes.
And, all right, so each of us will decide how we want to allocate the time, but we're going to get, in essence, because we have the Fourth Amendment vote. Is it your intention to bring the Fourth Amendment vote up first?
No, I was going to take them in order and give everyone a chance to speak. I plan to speak at the first one and then not after that.
Okay.
Roll call, please.
On 340?
Yes.
Fish?
Well, I deeply appreciate this hearing and the inspiring testimony from so many friends and advocates. And I was reflecting on the constant refrain about the past, the present, and the future. And I don't have the power to change the past. We do collectively have the power to change the future. And I honestly believe that the path that I hope we together choose today as a council puts us on a much more solid footing going forward. We would not be here had it not been for all the advocates who stepped up and said, we've got to do better. And I said last time how inspired I was personally by Margaret Bax stepping up and Debbie Iona and Susan Emmons and all of the people that literally built this movement and have sustained it. But the person who inspired me the most was Gretchen. Because Gretchen came to this chambers when she was at the end of her life. And none of us knew how grave her illness was when she was here. She did not look like herself. And she was had difficulty moving and was obviously in pain. And it was literally the last time she went to a public forum and said something about essentially the life cause that she championed, which was people in poverty and holding government and people in power accountable to do something about it. This Saturday, there will be a memorial service, and we'll all get a chance to reflect on how she impacted our lives. I can't begin to catalog or describe all the ways that she impacted my life, but I found her words at the last hearing so inspiring that I just want to close with what she said. She said, "I'm Gretchen Kefouri, retired, I thought." She didn't say that she was at the very end of her life. "I'm here today like the ghost of Christmas past. And my job is to remind you," as she looked at us sternly, "I'm Scrooge, by the way," she said, laughing. "And everyone that has had to work with me and for me knows that's the truth. And the reason I feel like the Christmas past reminder is relevant is that commitments that we have made have not been kept. Believe me, I know how hard this is. I still don't think it's enough. Our little group of old timers," with apologies, "or old bats, or whatever we call ourselves, we just don't think that this," meaning Amendment 4, "is specific enough. There isn't enough agreement as to what will be developed and when it will be developed. And we want to see more of the specificity. I am just begging you to reserve this very critical tool. Like it or not, it is a critical tool that the city has to finance affordable housing. Use it wisely. These are precious resources, and you have the power to use them wisely." The last words that she spoke in her very public life was to tell us that it was her job to remind us. And each of you who've testified today in your way have reminded us that we have a commitment that we have not kept. A year ago, there was no path forward to meeting the goals of 0-60 in this district, and there was no money to fund it. Today, through the combination of the Fourth Amendment to the Urban Renewal Plan and this resolution, we have a commitment of this council to meet and exceed the 270-unit gap. We have at least $40 million of new resources, and we are confident we have the dirt to build this housing. But as Gretchen would say, that's not enough. But it's a hell of a start. And so while I accept that we have fallen short and we always have to do more, I also want to acknowledge and celebrate this moment and give thanks to everybody that allowed us to make this progress today. To all the advocates and the people who've testified, to Liam Frost in my office and Shannon Callahan, Dan, in your office, to Patrick Quinton and the stellar team at PDC, to Tracy and Javier at PHB, to all my colleagues, in particular Commissioner Fritz, who after all did not support the education URA, but insisted that once that commitment was made, all the parties be treated fairly once we pulled the plug on that URA. To Jillian Detweiler and Josh Alpert, to all the people who spent all this time coming up with this imperfect plan, I say humbly thank you. And today I'm proud to vote aye.
Saltzman.
This resolution memorializes the diligent efforts that have occurred and will occur in the future by both the Portland Development Commission and the Portland Housing Bureau to identify an additional parcel of land to achieve our affordable housing goals for the North McAdam Urban Renewal Area. As we all know, and has been so eloquently stated this morning, the need for affordable housing has never been greater. Rents are rising rapidly, and many Portlanders and Portland families are being priced out of our city. The North McAdam area offers a very opportunity-rich area for affordable housing to be. It's got good it's rich in transportation. It's got good schools that people, young people, will go to in that area, and it meets all of our criteria for high opportunity area. So we are determined to make sure that we meet our goals, and hopefully we'll exceed our goals on affordable housing in North McAdam. I thank Commissioner Fish for his leadership on this resolution and everybody he also thanked previously as well. Aye.
Novick.
Mayor, just point of privilege, and I apologize because my handwriting is like a doctor's handwriting, and sometimes I can't even read it. The reason that Jillian and Josh were at the table and the PDC was at the table and that we were able to do a little bit of a stretch in this work is because the mayor of our city said it was important to him personally.